verses 1 and 2 for the text of our lesson this morning. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, or serving as overseers. Actually, I'm getting the old King James mixed up with the new King James there. Serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly. We're going to come back to that verse later on because that's a really basic passage concerning how the local church is governed, or we might say concerning how we have the organization of the Lord's church. A number of years ago, when I was preaching up in northern New York, a preacher from San Antonio called me. I never met him before or since, but he gave me a call, and I don't remember why he called me. But during the process of the conversation, obviously we got around to how churches cooperate. And he asked me a question. He said, "Well, are you anti-cooperation?" And I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I said, "No, I believe in scriptural congregational cooperation. That is, I believe churches of Christ can cooperate with each other in doing things, but it has to be in a way that is in harmony with what the scriptures say concerning that cooperation." Well, he dropped that subject and turned to something else and had no more to say about it. But that is an accusation that's been made against me, that I'm anti-cooperation. I want you to know it's not true. I believe in scriptural congregational cooperation. I believe that churches of Christ can cooperate with each other, but I believe there is a New Testament pattern for how to do that. And I want to talk about that, the cooperation between congregations today, but because this is a pretty broad field, there's a lot I could say about it, I want to limit us to the work of evangelism. By evangelism, I mean taking the gospel to the lost. And so I have a question that I want to pose, and I'm going to try to answer that from the New Testament. And I'm not going to look at everything the New Testament says about it. I believe that that would take too long. But I'd be very happy if you want to have a private study about this to do that and to look at every passage that I can think of and any that you can think of that have a bearing on how congregations may scripturally cooperate with each other in taking the gospel to the lost. And that's what we want to pose for us, the question, how may local churches of Christ scripturally cooperate with each other in taking the gospel to the lost in the work of evangelists. Now, there is a basic principle concerning the organization of the New Testament church, and we talked about this last week, and that basic principle is autonomy. Now, I'm going to throw up some fancy stuff here for just a moment. I apologize for that ahead of time, and then after I've thrown up the fancy stuff, I'm going to break it down real simple where we all understand what I'm talking about. The dictionary, that Webster's dictionary, defines the word autonomy as the quality or state of being independent, free, and self-directing, individual or group freedom. And what that simply means is any entity that has autonomy decides itself what they're going to do. They make their own decisions. Now, that the United States is supposed to be an autonomous nation. That is, that no other nation tells this country what to do. We make, as a nation, we make our own decisions. That's autonomy. And I do believe that that applies to local congregations. And here's what I mean by congregational autonomy. I simply mean that the direction of the execution of the will of Christ is completely within the local church. Now, Christ is over every single local church. He's the head of the universal church. He's the head of the church he built. We can only do what he directs us to do. If we act without the authority of Christ, we're acting in rebellion against him. We must have book, chapter, and verse from the New Testament. Not the Old Testament, the New Testament, for everything we do, because that's the expression of the will of Christ. But when we get down to what the local church is going to do, under his authority, within what he has authorized us to do, then each local church decides itself what they're going to do or what we're going to do. It's not to be surrendered partially or completely to any outside control. Let me tell you what I do. Most of you know that from time to time I go over to Africa. And I enjoy the work over there. Here lately I've been going over to East Africa. I used to go to Nigeria and West Africa. But lately I've been going to Uganda and Kenya over in East Africa. And what I enjoy doing the most is teaching classes for preachers over there, because I think I can multiply myself doing that. And when I go over there, if I use big English words, remember, most of those people don't have a lot of education. And for all of them, English is a second language. It's not their first language. So if I start tossing around some big words over there, it's even worse than it is tossing around big words in Arkansas. They wouldn't have a clue what I'm talking about. I don't even mention the word autonomy over there. I use the phrase local control. And they understand what I'm talking about. Each local church controls its own affairs. Now, there's a lot of people in the religious world that would say they agree with that. But as I told a friend one time who was a Baptist, and he wanted to know about this autonomy, and I said, now, Baptists say they believe in autonomy. I want you to know I believe it with ferociously. I believe that there's not any compromising of local control with any outside body or with any outside human. No preacher has the right to tell us what we can do as a church. No other elders have the right to tell this local church what we are to do. All the decision making under the authority of Christ. Christ has all authority in heaven and earth. Underneath him, all the decision making is totally local, is within that local church. By the way, I'm going to just throw out something here. Those Africans like to hear that, and they well should like to hear, because it's the truth of the matter. Because they are sick and tired of Americans telling them what to do and everything. Now, if I can give them book, chapter, and verse, they have the same obligation to do it that you and I do. But I don't have the right to make any decisions for brethren over there, and they don't have any right to make any decisions for brethren over here. That's made within the local church. Well, I've gotten way ahead of myself, but at least now you know what I'm talking about. According to the New Testament pattern, there is a New Testament pattern. Elders are to be appointed in every church. Now, I'm going to throw out a thing or two. I'll try to keep it very brief as we go along. It's not in your outline. There are congregations that have not matured to the point to have elders. I'm glad that this congregation has elders. It makes it easier for the congregation to function, and that's the New Testament pattern of things. But we have a New Testament example of a congregation that, so far as is revealed, never had elders. That's the church in Antioch. And they still did all the things that a church with elders did. The church in Antioch, and you can read this, you can put this in your outline if you'd like to, Acts 13, verses 1 through 3, they sent out Paul and Barnabas. He was called Saul at that point, but his name was changed to Paul in that very chapter. They sent out Paul and Barnabas on Paul's first journey of preaching the gospel to the Gentiles, even though it's never ever mentioned that church has any elders, and it simply talks about there were prophets and teachers among them, and the church sent out Paul and Barnabas, and when Paul and Barnabas returned at the end of Acts chapter 14 from that first journey of taking the gospel to the Gentiles, they went and reported to the church in Antioch. No elders ever mentioned in Antioch. So a church without elders also has autonomy, local control, but the men, now I'll give you a couple of passages on this and then we'll move on. The men of the congregation make the decisions. For a congregation that has no elders, you can read 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, and the man is over the woman, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, and also read 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Now, if you didn't get those down, you ask me later, and I'll get you those passages. But 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, and 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. The men have the rule in the local church where there are no elders. But it's God's plan that elders be appointed in every church when we have men who are qualified for that. Well, here I go again. I'll throw you out two more passages. If you want to know what the qualifications are for elders, here's where you go to read about the qualifications for elders. Go to Titus chapter 1, begin in verse 5 and go down through verse 9. Titus chapter 1, verses 5 through 9, and 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Now, there's the two passages that give the qualifications for elders. 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7, Titus 1, 5 through 9. Now, that's what it takes to be an elder of the church. And the church then selects and they're appointed to the office, and then there are elders in the local church. And those elders are also called pastors or shepherds, and they're also called bishops or overseers. That's just three different names. Actually, I think I threw out about five different names there. But it's all different names for the same office in the local church. And in the local church, the elders are charged with two primary obligations: shepherding the souls of the members and making the decisions, overseeing. That somebody's got to make the decisions. That doesn't mean we have the right to lord it over the flock. We have to listen to the members and be concerned about what your opinions are. But then somebody has to make the decisions. And so that's what the elders do in the local church in Acts chapter 14, verse 23. Now, this is Paul and Barnabas coming to the end of Paul's first journey of preaching the gospel to the Gentiles. They've been through some places and they've established congregations. Now they're going back through those same places just before they go up in Acts 14, beginning of verse 26, and report back to the church at Antioch. Notice what they do when they're going back through those places where they'd already established churches. It says, so when they had appointed elders in every church and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they believed. Now, I want you to see two things in that passage. One is, there was every church had elders. Every church. That's God's plan. That's God's design. That's the pattern. Now, they have to have the qualification to be appointed. But then every local church is to have its elders. And I want you to notice also, it's a plurality. It's never one man over the church. There's no such thing in the New Testament as a one-man pastor system running or making the decisions for the local church. But rather, there's a plurality of elders in every local church. Now, that pattern never varies. It's always there in the New Testament. Over in Titus chapter 1, now Acts 14, 23 is early on in the career of the Apostle Paul as a preacher and an apostle. Titus chapter 1, verse 5 is toward the end of his career. Apparently here he's already been in prison, been let out of prison before he was imprisoned again and then executed. And now he's writing to Titus, who was an evangelist. He says, for this reason I left you in Crete, this is on the island of Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking. That's a very important duty of a preacher, to set the church in order, to get things properly organized. Now, what's the main thing in getting the church properly organized? And appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. So every church has elders, a plurality of elders. That's the Lord's design. That's the Lord's plan. Now, those elders have the oversight of the local church where they are. Now listen carefully to me, please. Let's get the passage and I'll come back. And I want to hammer this home. We need to understand this. This is very, very basic concerning how the Lord wants His church run. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. The elders who are among you, I exhort. I who am a fellow elder. Peter was an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ. He was also an apostle, a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Shepherd the flock. Now, see, there's one of the obligations of the elders. Shepherd the flock. What flock? Are elders supposed to shepherd all the flock in Arkansas? Are they supposed to shepherd all the flock in Baxter County? What flock are the elders to shepherd? Shepherd the flock of God, which is among you. That's just a Jewish idiomatic way of saying shepherd the flock where you are. The one that you're a member of, that's the one you're to shepherd. Serving as overseers. And that word overseers is the word translated bishops in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. And that's what the word bishop means, an overseer. Elders, overseers or bishops, pastors or shepherds, that's all the same thing. And men are to be selected in every church, and they have the oversight of what? The church where they are. Now listen carefully, please. Brother Joe Davis and I, as the members here know, are the elders of this church. We have the oversight of this church. That's an obligation, not a privilege. I guarantee you, just ask Brother Joe if you think I'm wrong. That's an obligation, not a privilege. But that's the only thing, as elders, that we have the oversight of. As elders, we don't have the oversight of any part of the work of any other church. We don't have the oversight of any organization started by some men. We only have, in our capacity, in our role as elders, we only have the oversight of this local church, the Highway 5 South Church of Christ, Mountain Home, Arkansas. We don't have any say whatsoever in what the congregation down in Salesville, the Norfolk Church of Christ, does. We don't have any say whatsoever what the West Road Church of Christ does. We don't have any say whatsoever what the Mountain Home Church of Christ does. Those churches are to have their own elders when they have matured to the point of having those. They make their own decisions. We make the decisions for this local church. We don't build any kind of an organization that is the brainchild of people, of humans, uninspired humans, and as elders oversee that. Only this local church, am I making myself plain? Only this local church, that's the only thing that we have oversight of. But the elders do have that oversight. Now, local churches may cooperate as long as they don't violate that local control. Each local church deciding all its own business. Nobody outside deciding any of the business of the local church. Now, they can cooperate. We can cooperate. We can cooperate in sending teaching and news to other churches. An example of that is in Acts chapter 11, verses 19 through 23. You open your Bibles there, you can look on the chart. Acts 11, 19 through 23. This is the New King James Version. Now those who were scattered after the persecution that arose over Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch. They traveled in far places, preaching the word but to no one but the Jews only. Now this actually goes back to, this is what's called a flashback, to the time after Stephen was stoned in Acts chapter 7 and then Acts 8, 1 through 4. And there was a great persecution and the brethren were scattered. And some of them traveled up to Phoenicia, that's up north. Some of them traveled over to Cyprus, that's out in the Mediterranean Sea. And some of them traveled all the way to Antioch, and that's way up north. That's the capital of the Roman province of Syria. And they spoke, when they came to Antioch, verse 20. But some of them were men from Cyprus and Cyrene, who when they had come to Antioch, spoke to the Hellenists. Now that's Greek-speaking Jews is what Hellenists are. Preaching the Lord Jesus. And the head of the Lord was with them, and a great number believed and turned to the Lord. Now here's what I'm driving at. Then news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem. How did the church in Jerusalem hear about what was going on at Antioch? It doesn't say. It just said news came. And that's what you call totally generic. Any way in the world, as long as it doesn't violate autonomy, they could have sent that news down there. It may have been that somebody from Antioch sent a letter back to Jerusalem and said, hey, we're doing great up here. You ought to see what's going on up here. Or they'd say down here because it's lower in elevation. Down here, you ought to see what's going on down here in Antioch. Lots of folks being converted to Christ. And it may just be that somebody traveled back. I don't know. It's totally generic. And so any way that news could have gotten there is fine. How can we get news out to our brethren about things that are interesting to us and we want them to know about? Any way we want to, as long as it doesn't violate the civil law and the law of God. Just go any way. If you want to send out a bulletin, a news bulletin, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. If you want to put it on the radio, maybe that's overkill. But whatever you want of it, that's fine. And if you want to get the news out to the brethren, if you want to say, hey, Joe, you need to drive over and tell folks in Harrison. Well, why would I do that? Pick up the phone and call them. And let them, any way you want to. News can be sent out from one congregation to another. And notice what else happened. It gets interesting now. And they, who's they? That's the church in Jerusalem. They sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch. Who, when he had come and had seen the grace of God, he was glad. And in Curtin, we saw the grace of God, that means the results of the grace of God, folks being saved. And encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they should continue with the Lord. Let me ask you a question. Did the church in Jerusalem send teaching to the church in Antioch? They most certainly did. When they sent Barnabas up there, what did he do? He encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they would continue with the Lord. And so the church in Jerusalem sent teaching to the church in Antioch. May one congregation send teaching to another congregation? Most certainly. If you want to send out a bulletin, if you want to send out a paper, if you want to have a television program, a radio program, and you want to say, we're having a gospel meeting, we invite you folks to come attend us. Great, fine, do so. That is a scriptural way. But you know what? If we get an announcement from a congregation concerning a function that they're going to have, you know who decides who announces that? It's made here locally in this congregation. Antioch could decide, are we going to accept Barnabas or not? They made that decision themselves. Now, they accepted him. But that was a decision to be made at Antioch. And each local church makes its own decision. Are we going to announce this? Are we going to allow this teacher to come here and teach us? And by the way, let me tell you something. When I go, I don't care whether it's over to Africa or whether it's down in Belize, where I've been four times, or that's Central America, or whether it's Samoa, where I've been six times, I don't go and preach to those brethren unless they ask me to come. I don't go to any congregation that doesn't want me. I don't want to force myself on folks. If I'm going to be, now it's a different matter preaching where the gospel hasn't been preached. But if I'm going to go work with the local church, they've got to say, Keith, we'd like you to come. And if I don't get an invitation, I don't go. Because I don't have the right to. At Africa, Belize, Samoa, or Mountain Home, Arkansas, each local church has its own, decides its own affairs and decides who they're going to accept as a teacher and who they're not going to accept. Local churches may send teaching anywhere. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 8. For from you the word of the Lord is sounded forth not only in Macedonia and Achaia, that's two Roman provinces, but also in every place your faith toward God has gone out, so that we do not need to say anything. The brethren there in Thessalonica sent the gospel everywhere. Do you know? Maybe you don't. Do you see back up there behind, at the very back, there is a map of the world. You see that? And there's some pins stuck in that map. You know why there's pins in that map? That's where currently the Bible Correspondence Course that's put out by the Highway 5 South Church of Christ in Mountain Home, Arkansas. That's where that Bible Correspondence Course is being sent currently. Now, different. And by the way, some Muslim countries it's going to. It's going all over the world. We get requests from Russia from time to time, but we never can get stuff into Russia. They keep it out. But other places, we've even gotten from all over the world. Sandy could tell you where those things go because she's the one who grades them and sends them out. But all over the world, we get requests by our website. We have a website. It's called www.christistheway.com. And people from all over the world, literally all over the world, read that website and ask for the Bible Correspondence Course, and we send it to them free of charge. We don't charge them a penny. And I'm just delighted this little old tiny congregation here in Mountain Home, Arkansas, we can send the gospel anywhere because we're authorized by the Lord to send the gospel everywhere in the world, and that's what we try to do. A congregation may act alone in supporting a preacher in another place. Philippi did that. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only for even of Thessalonica. You sent aid once and again for my necessities. when Paul left Philippi and went to Thessalonica, both those are in Macedonia, then only the church in Philippi shared with him, had fellowship with him, what that means. And that's the word koinonia, the word for fellowship. Only Philippi had fellowship with Paul when he left there and went to Thessalonica to preach. So one church can support a preacher working with another church, or several churches may send support to a preacher working with another church. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 18. Now, Paul is using a figure of speech here when he says, I robbed other churches. He didn't literally stick them up. He didn't literally rob them. But the churches that were sending the money to Paul got no benefit from Paul's preaching. The brethren at Corinth did so. In a figure, he says, I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to do you service. Do you know, brethren, and by the way, I'm going to throw this out too. I get support from three congregations outside of Mountain Home for my work here. Now, the time is coming when that needs to end, because this congregation is having sufficient, you can look at the board and tell that, sufficient contribution, and I'm very happy for that, and I commend you for that, that we ought to be supporting our own preacher and me not getting outside support. But right now, there. And by the way, I send out a report to you brethren, don't I? And the brethren here locally, I don't know, like some preachers send one report out to the churches that support them and another church, another report to the local brethren. I don't do that. I send the same report to the local brethren that I send to the churches that support me. And you get a list of the money that I get to preach the gospel here and where it comes from. And if you just read the report, I send it out every... Now, I send it by email. If you don't get email, let me know you want it, and I'll print it off for you. But I send it by, and I send it out every month. Well, most every month. And so you could get that, you know. And so that's scriptural. There's Bible authority for that. But notice, each of those local churches sends directly to me, and I report back to each one of them. And by doing that, each of them is controlling what they themselves do. They're controlling their own work. Now, unscriptural cooperation would be where any church or organization assumes the oversight of congregations of any part of their work, whether it's evangelism or anything else. And that's a violation of 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. The elders make the decision over what's to be done. Now, this statement up here is a statement from Brother Lewis G. Hale. He's a professor of a Bible at Oklahoma Christian University. And he made this statement in defense of a sponsoring church. It was called the Herald of Truth. I think it's defunct now. And notice what he said about that. Now, this, he was defending it when he wrote this. This is a book he wrote a number of years ago. He says, there are hundreds of churches which send financial aid to keep the program on the air. He's talking about a TV program that was called Herald of Truth. They have no part. Now, you get this? This is a man defending it. They have no part in the management of the program. Now, is this local church going to send money to another church to support something that we have no say whatsoever in what they do? The answer is no. We're not going to do that. They have no part in the selection of the preacher, singers, nor sermon topics. Their part is solely that of financial assistance. Give us your money and we'll decide what to do with it. That's the principle. That's wrong. That's sacrificing local control. Brethren, we're not going to do that. We believe as much as anybody in sending the gospel all over the world, but we're going to control how our money is spent, because God put that control within the local church. We're not going to ask any church to give up any part of its local control to us, and we're not going to give up any part of our local control to another church, and we're not going to give it up to any human organization. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, that makes total sense to me. I hope it does to you. That's the New Testament pattern. Now, here's what's being done. Or here's what should not be done. There's no centralization, whether it's through a sponsoring church or a society or an association. Because this, number one, destroys local autonomy. I believe you can see that. And here's something you need to think about also. It also denominationalizes the church. When you get a bunch of churches stuck together with one overseeing part or all of the work of those churches, what have you created? You've created a denomination. That's the beginning of a denomination when you do that. And we're not going to have any part two of that. Now, you know, my Baptist friends, particularly those that are part of a Baptist association, they say they believe in local control, local autonomy. But they're all tied together in a Baptist association. There's at least a couple of Baptist associations that are headquartered in Arkansas. One in Little Rock, one in Texarkana. And those are denominations. They're Baptist. There are many Baptist denominations, not just one Baptist denomination. They're denominations. And that organization is what shows them to be denominations. And you know what? The original dividing factor between the Christian church and the Church of Christ, it goes back to 1849, Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, it was first set up as the United Christian Missionary Society, later it changed its name to the American Christian Missionary Society. Alexander Campbell was the first president. If somebody accuses me, have you ever been called a Campbellite? If somebody accuses you of being called a Campbellite, just tell them, no. If I were a Campbellite, I'd be a part of the Christian church. Because he was the first president of the United Christian Missionary Society. And that's what was the first dividing wedge between the Christian church and the Church of Christ in the mid-1800s. And what were they doing? And by the way, you know what the defense Alexander Campbell made of that? He said local churches doing their own work is not efficient enough. We need more efficiency, so we're going to have a national organization. And that was the beginning of the Christian church with the United Christian Missionary Society. It denominationalized, and the churches sacrificed their autonomy. Nobody forced them to send their money, but they sacrificed their autonomy. The same thing is true of World Bible School. Started in 1973. You want to know about World Bible School? I can tell you all about it. I've had a lot of meetings with World Bible School. It's an evangelistic organization, started originally in California, now it's headquartered in Austin, Texas. In 1973, that takes money from churches of Christ all over the country, sends, they say Bible correspondence courses, but they send a whale of a lot more than that. They send money to African preachers, and then they have the African preachers under their thumb. And there's two different faces to World Bible School. We see one of it in the United States, and they have another one that they see in Africa. Or missionaries sent by overseeing churches. And you brethren ought to be familiar with this. I know some missionaries. I've had dealing with them when I'm over in Samoa particularly, but I've also had dealing with them in Africa. And they have an overseeing church that sponsors them. And many churches, I know one, well, his name is Randy English. And he has a home in Pongo Pongo, American Samoa. I've been in his home. He's from Fort Smith, Arkansas. You can go to his website, and he gets money from 100 churches or so. But the money's not sent to him. It's sent to a treasury in Forest Park, Georgia. And the elders of the church in Forest Park, Georgia, oversee his work. And all the churches that contribute to that are sacrificing a part of their autonomy to the elders of the Forest Park Church of Christ in Forest Park, Georgia. And by the way, churches in Samoa that are controlled by them are also sacrificing their autonomy. It works two ways. All right, we're actually out of time, so I'm just going to have to quit here. I wish I had more time to finish all of this. Now, if you have questions about any of this, brothers and sisters, I know that what I've dealt with today is controversial. I understand that very, very well. I've had debates about this. I know it's controversial. If you have questions, if you have disagreement, come to me and talk to me. I'll talk to you in a reasonable way. We'll discuss book, chapter, verse. We'll see what the Bible says. If you can show me I'm wrong about this, I'll change. I won't wait till tomorrow. I'll change today. But you've got to show me book, chapter, and verse, not just somebody's emotional argument about something. Book, chapter, and verse is what it'll take. We must do the Lord's work. We must take the gospel to the whole world. But listen carefully, brothers and sisters. We've got to do God's work in God's way. Yes, we've got to do God's work. God wants the gospel taken to the whole world, but we've got to do it in the way He says do it, not in the way men say do it. Our song of invitation and encouragement number 340. Maybe somebody needs to make your life right with the Lord. We invite you to come while we stand, while we sing.
I gave my life for Thee.